Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, you're going to get a real talk with a real leader. And we're going to break down a hot topic to help take your game to the next level. Today's episode is with Brett Esman, who is new to me, which is new for me in my episodes. I usually know the people. So Brett, I'm excited to get to know you a bit as we have this conversation.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So folks, I always tell you how I know my guests. So I recently released an episode with Mike Palma, who is a legendary recruiter and business development guy. And so I get this message from Brett and with the most humble message that said, and he's a creative, might I add, he's a creative director in the agency world. And I get this note that says, if I ever want a less than talented creative on the show, give him a shout. And of course, I knew right away, Brett, that you were going to be like this incredible creative. And I figured that you had a relationship with Mike Palma. So I was like, I was leaning in. I was like, I had to know. And then when I asked you, what do you want to talk about? And you said that you wanted to talk about our hot topic for today, everyone, is breaking down creating your own opportunities, which told me so much about your mindset. So I was hooked. I was like, okay, I can't wait. Let's get you scheduled. So I am just, again, I am so excited to get to know you, to have you share your mindset with us. So is that how you found me through that episode of Mike's?
Yeah. So Mike placed me at a job probably 5 years ago. And so I saw you guys talked about his new book and I really liked the episode. So yeah, I reached out and yeah, so here we are, and I hope I don't let you down by what I have to say.
Oh my gosh, no way. So folks, if you didn't watch that episode with Mike, his book is called Walk with a Humble Swagger. And again, your message came to me and I was like, oh, this is his humble swagger coming to me in a message. So, you know, again, like I said, I knew it right away. But I would love for you, like, tell us about yourself. Tell us about your career and what's got you to the seat that you're in now as a creative director for an agency.
Yeah, so currently I work at an independent agency in Minneapolis called Preston Spire. I've been here for a couple years. Before that, I worked at Periscope, which is now, I believe, called Betty. That I was at for 7.5 years, and I was an art director there for a while. And prior to that, this is advertising, so we move around quite a bit. It's kind of the way it goes. I worked at Martin Williams, which is not even a place anymore. And before that, I was out in Portland, Maine at a small little agency called the VA Agency. And then before that, I was in Chicago for 2 years at FCB Global in Havas. And the reason why I started my career in Chicago, I graduated in the heart of the Great Recession. So my instructors in portfolio school were getting let go. The market was terrible. And I was like, I really like this advertising thing. Like, I'm going to keep doing this. And so I got an interview the day after I graduated portfolio school at Crispin Porter and Bogusky when they were a hot shop out in Denver. And my now wife was my girlfriend at the time. And I told her, I was like, you know, as soon as I get a real job, because I was working at Kinko's at the time, I'm like, we're going to get married. So I get the interview, fly out to Denver, come back. And I'm like, I'm totally going to get this job. And so I went to buy a ring.
So oh my gosh.
A ring went, awesome. A week went by, 2 weeks went by, 3 weeks went by, a month went by. And then they called, they're like, yeah, we're not going to hire you. I'm like, oh my God, like, how am I going to pay for this ring now? You know, I'm making like $9 an hour at Kinko's, you know, making copies and like, you know, slinging flash drives. And so I'm like, shit, I'm going to have to be like a manager or something so I can like pay this ring off. And so I started taking like interviews around like the Kinko's corporate world. And so I got this job at, or I guess a promotion as like the district print manager or something like that. So when like a Target or a Best Buy or like a United Healthcare came in and they had like, I don't know, like a $25,000 print job, I would be like the consultant. So I took the promotion because I think I went from like $9 to like $12 an hour and I got like benefits. So I'm like, this is amazing, you know, but I, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I really want to work in advertising. And so I started the job and then, I don't know, the ad gods called me and they're like, hey, do you want to work at FCB in Chicago? I'm like, absolutely. And so took the job, we moved to Chicago and yeah. And I've been doing it now for, I think about 14 years.
Oh my gosh, I love that story. But what at what point did you actually ask her to marry you?
So
you missed the spot in the
We did get married. So
yes, no.
So the day that I got the ring, I actually proposed to her.
I love that.
Because I was at Kinko's and I was slacking, or I wasn't even Slack at the time because I was, I think, 17 years ago. It was like Gmail messaging or something. And I left my laptop open at home. And so my wife saw how I was going to propose. And so I was talking to my buddy Arthur. I was like, yeah, so I'm going to go pick up the ring today. I'm going to put it in my, like, my running socks and we're going to go for a run and I'm going to fake a side ache. So my wife calls me and she's like, hey, I have good news and I have bad news. I'm like, okay, you know, tell me the good news. She's like, well, the shirts that I ordered you from Express, which I don't even know if is a thing anymore, are here. I'm like, okay, cool. What's the bad news? And she goes, I know how you're going to propose to me. You left your chat open. I'm like, okay. So I left to get the ring anyways. And so when she got home from work, I was like, hey, let's go for a run. Cause I'm like, she's not going to expect that I'm actually going to go through with this. And she's like, okay, you know, just don't fake a side ache. And so I had like my Nike running pants on and like these long tube socks. So on my left sock, I had like my speech in a Ziploc bag, like rubber band in the sock. And then on the right, I had the ring box rubber band in. And so I was hoping to go around this lake where there's like this little bridge. And it was probably, I don't know, 500 yards into the run. But she's like, oh, let's do the long run today. I'm like, okay. So about a mile and a half in, like the ring popped out of the box and like the diamond started poking into my foot. And so I kneel down to like pretend that I'm tying my shoes and I pull the ring out and she comes over and she nudges me. She's like, oh, does your side hurt? And then I grabbed her hand and I handed her the ring. And
I love this story. Good job. Good job, Brett.
And so, yeah. And then, you know, we got engaged and then I think probably about a year and a half later, I got my job in Chicago. So we moved to Chicago. We had a new dog, new jobs, and then we were planning a wedding back in Minnesota. So it was chaotic.
Oh, wow. And so when did this concept of creating your own opportunity become important to you? Or when did that become like a mantra for yourself?
I think probably in the last 3 years, because I kind of had this, I don't know, I would say it was delusion that only good opportunities come across your desk. And like, when you know it, you know it. But I kept getting the same assignments or like the same like block and tackle things. And then this one day I flipped the switch. I'm like, well, I know the client asked for X, Y, and Z, but what they really need to do is A, B, and C. And so we would show them the work that they asked for, but then we would show them the stuff that they should do. And it didn't work every time, but then, you know, clients are like, oh my God, this is really smart. Like, we didn't even think about it this way. And then you started building that trust with them. And then I started doing side projects. We just did this thing with Change the Ref last year. I don't know if you're familiar with the organization or not. So it started probably 6 or 7 years ago. Patricia and Manny Oliver lost their son, Joaquin, at the Parkland school shooting. And so they started this organization to raise awareness about gun violence and, you know, gun reform and everything like that. And so I was picking my kids up from school one day. And, you know, I asked them how their day was and they said, you know, we had to do the bad guy drill. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. What's the bad guy drill? They're like, oh, you know, we hide in the bathroom because the bad guy's in the school with the gun and we have to be quiet. I'm thinking, Jesus Christ, like, that's awful. You know, growing up in Minnesota, we had like fire drills.
Tornado drills.
And tornado drills. And, you know, that was terrifying. Like whenever like the siren would go off, you know, you're like, is this it? Like, is this the day that the school gets lifted up? And so I had to pick up groceries or something at Aldi, and that's the grocery store where you can rent grocery carts for like 25 cents. And so this idea popped in my head of like, man, we're getting to the point in society that we're going to need to rent bulletproof vests wherever we go. And so we had this idea called the New Life Vest, and then we pitched it to Manny and Patricia, and they actually came to Minneapolis and we had a rack full of bulletproof vests, and we're outside of a grocery store, we're on a bridge, we're outside of a theater and stuff. And they just asked people, like, if they wanted to wear a bulletproof vest while they did their daily activities. So, you know,
I have the chills when you're saying this, by the way. Like, yeah, it's just so real. I mean,
yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, doing stuff like that, you know, I guess making your own opportunities to do, I guess, meaningful work and powerful work. And because, like, I think what I really liked about doing stuff like that, you know, my kids know about it. Like, we don't tell them like the details about the campaign or anything like that. But, you know, they told me, they're like, you know, we're scared to go to school, you know? And my oldest said, he's like, I'm really sad, you know, that I'm not going to see you and mom get older, because I know I'm just going to be shot. Like, I don't know when or where, but I know I'm not going to get older. And so for him to know that I'm doing this kind of work to like really make an impact and make change, he told me, he's like, if you ever get tired of doing it, like, I'll help you, Dad. Like, I'll, you know, I'll step in and do stuff. So, you know, doing stuff like that and being able to flex your creativity for good. But, you know, like, that's one extreme. But then, you know, the other extreme was just showing your clients other things that they didn't ask for, but you saw as an opportunity of a better solution than.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, we all get into these routines of just like checking the box, going down, having tunnel vision. So you're not looking to the right or left. And then that's where like the opportunities lay. I mean, it's a lot like basketball. Like I told you earlier, I coach a fourth grade travel team. And as you know, the basketball player, like, you have a game plan, but it never goes that way. Like, you have to kind of make your own opportunities in the game too. Like, you're going to have someone double team you, or you're going to have them do something else. You're going to have to do a back door, or, you know, it's a lot like life and it's a lot like business. You just have to be ready to pivot and do things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, for the audience, the context is your children are, what did you say, 7 and 10?
7 and 10, yep.
So we're talking about 7 and 10-year-olds expressing these things and that fear and that, like, so that is, I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing. Thank you for actually, you know, wanting to make an impact with the work that you're doing. Because sometimes in marketing, you end up like, I've got dog treats here. You know, you're like,
right.
You're peddling dog treats kind of thing. So I think it is, sometimes it can be rare, but it can also be really special to be able to do something that has another layer of, it's really smart, it's really creative, it resonates, and it has that impact layer. So, and I just really just appreciate that effort. And the thought, because a lot of the work that I do is actually in the revenue growth consulting space. That's partly how I work with Mike Palma. And a lot of the things that I find with people in agencies a lot of times is just stick to the RFP, stick to exactly what the client asked us for. Don't veer from it. And sometimes that's in a volatile market like we've had over the last several years, it's the safe way. And so I think, so I have seen it too work really well when you're actually like, okay, yes, and I hear you, and I'm going to show you what you're asking for, and I'm going to show you this next thing that's going to blow your mind. And so I think that also can work with the client, shows them, you know, a new, different way, but it's also just for your morale and your team's morale to be able to do fun and creative stuff rather than, again, just what's written on the RFP.
Well, and I think if, you know, like I understand, you know, clients have mortgages, I have mortgages, and sometimes they can't stick their neck out and they have to do what they're told. But I think it opens the door for like conversation of like how you can approach the next project, or even like looking at your organization in a different light. You know, it's like, hey, X, Y, and Z agency saw this insight that we didn't even think about, like, we could do this, you know, maybe it's a 5-year plan or, you know, 2-year plan. But I think, like, you know, you, when you play it safe and you do kind of that, the mundane, like you get ignored. People don't see you, you know, and we're human, you know, we're not robots. And it's just that can keep going, duh, 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 you know, like we veer. I mean, that's what makes us complex, but also great, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes the best clients can be the ones that are actually like, here's what I think I need /but.
Right.
You tell me, you help bring it so that I really think like that collaboration between agency and client, so that, you know, because gosh, if I'm sitting in the seat of the, you know, the client, please, you do this all the time. I might have an inkling, but make this idea better. You know, and so that's where I think the magic can really happen.
Well, and I think just from my experience, the most innovative or interesting work that I've been a part of, it has been like a two-way street with the client. It's like, hey, we had this idea, you know, I know you didn't ask for it, but like this could be really big for your brand, you know, instead of here's 3 ideas, take it or leave it. Like, I think those days are over. Like, I think it's very much like, hey, we don't know your business as well as you, but this idea could help do this. And then they could be like, well, I don't think it worked there, but here we have this other branch of our business where it could. And then, you know, it's like this, we're having a conversation, you know, like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that, again, if we come to it as, you know, agency people, as people who are trying to help create solutions for the client, if we come to it with that thought of, I'm bringing you an idea and a creative concept that is actually a solution to a problem right. that you have, or maybe it's even a problem that you don't have. Because sometimes part of, I think it's actually kind of the fun part of working with a client is to like see around a corner that they're not quite aware of yet or don't have a particular insight. Right. That, you know, my team does. So I think that is, you know, I just think, again, that's a difference maker when I'm working with agencies and I'm giving them guidance and, you know, related to revenue growth. It's like, bring an insight, bring us, right. you know, a solution, not just, you know, something that looks pretty or sounds cool.
Right. Yeah. I've also found out in meetings, probably the hard way of when you present work to a client, you're like, oh, this is a really fun and wacky, cool idea. It's like, to us, yeah, it's a fun, cool, and wacky idea, but like they care about like the bottom line, like how is it going to help their brand? How are they going to get growth? So like, if you just change the vernacular a little bit of like, hey, we have this really smart idea that can help your business do X, Y, and Z, and like put it in like more of their terms instead of like, yeah, so the creatives were sitting around and we had this really zany idea. It's like, yeah. Next, you know?
No. Yeah, no, exactly. So I have a colleague that I work with named Bob Wiesner. Again, he's with the group that a change force that I worked with Mike. And this is something we talk about a lot. It's like being able to know how those decision makers are thinking. To your right. point, if you actually stop and put yourself in their seats, they're thinking about what's the strategy behind why and how and right. you know, where's the return on this and what's this going to do for me? So you're totally right. And, you know, just shifting that positioning of it can, that's where they're going to either listen or they're over there, like planning their grocery list until you're done telling this. Like to your point, it's just a wacky idea.
Right. They don't want wacky. They want something that solves something for them, you know?
Yeah.
And to your point, it's like, it needs to be baked in strategy or like some insight, you know, like one of my good friends used to work at Fallon and the whole BMW films, like that whole thing was based on the insight of BMW owners don't watch TV ads anymore. And so that's why they did everything digitally. Oh, wow. So like if that insight didn't come from the planner, they would have been like, oh, let's do more TV, you know, like. And that was before YouTube. I think it took like 18 hours to download an episode, you know, yeah. which I mean, you could just tell like these gearheads, like how much they wanted to watch it, you know? And yeah. I mean, you know, it had, you know, Madonna and Guy Ritchie, that doesn't help, you know, that helps the cause as well. But, you know, just having that, cause I mean, think about it 20 years ago, it'd be like, hey, we're not going to run TV. We're going to do this thing online. And it's like, yeah. What is online? You know?
Exactly.
I mean, it's almost like when you're trying to get someone to get off of Broadcast Now and go on TikTok, they're like, oh, what? Yeah. Like, why would I go on TikTok? But it's kind of that, I don't know. I feel like we're kind of at that creative revolution again of like new tools and new ways to reach people, which is super exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you seen a lot of shifting related to that, even since like the pandemic era?
Yeah, I think, I mean, digital has been, you know, hasn't gone away, but I think a lot of clients are really starting to invest more in social. And I mean, me personally, like we cut cable probably 8 years ago, like we stream everything, mm-hmm. you know, and when we have like we have Disney Plus and we have, I think we have the ad version. So we'll see like commercials that way. But other than that, it's like, I don't watch TV commercials anymore.
Yeah.
Everything I see is from, you know, TikTok or Instagram, which is yeah. crazy.
Same. I've actually just not been a big TV person. And we actually were like late to cutting the cord because we're big, we all watch a lot of sports. So we were trying to watch ESPN or the old
right.
sports. But to that point, the way I stay up on things is really through social. And I've been doing Duolingo for almost 2 years every day. But I also like, I look at their ads, you know, like, because I don't use the ad free version, but you're right. You know, it's all through, you know, what's in our hand, what's in, you know, what is that digital delivery? And, you know, I figured that you felt it changing, you know, even more so in the last few years, but I, you know, just was curious what you thought about it.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because I'm an art director by trade. So like, I want every pixel to be perfect, but like, when you put something on Instagram or TikTok, like it needs to look like it belongs on there. And so that's been like a huge shift for me. It's like, okay, we need to shoot this on a phone, or we need to make it a little more grittier instead of like perfectly, you know, perfectly composite shots and everything and perfectly color grade. And it was just, you know, for a long time, I'm like, no, we're going to make it look beautiful. But it's like, you know, when I go through the feed, I'm like, add next. And then I see the content I want, you know, because it's more organic and it has like that, I don't know, DIY vibe to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we're talking about this, I'm thinking back to your whole thing about creating your own opportunities. And you said that you really came to the forefront for you in the last couple of years, but even when you were describing your job at Kinko's and then how you went and found that next job, I think at FCB, if that was right, what you said, yep. You know, it's like, it sounds like you were already doing, it was already part of your DNA or something to create your own opportunities. And I think that's even the part about, you know, how you then went on to these other roles at other agencies, there is a degree to which you have to create your own opportunity in your career search, right? I mean, it's your responsibility.
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's a good point. I think maybe in the last 3 years, maybe my skill set finally caught up to my ambition, because, you know, thinking back to like at FCB, like I would do like stuff on the side for like other clients that I wasn't on just to like get onto those clients. And like the stuff, you know, like I would compete against like senior digital artists and like their stuff was beautiful. My stuff just, I don't know, it looked like someone did it in Microsoft Paint. but you know, one thing that I always took pride in and that I think I'm pretty good at is networking, because, you know, one of my instructors in ad school told me it's not really what you know, it's who you know. And it's always, you know, it pertains to advertising, but even, you know, going back to the Change the Rough project that we did, I mean, we had like a $5,000 budget that we invested from the agency. So like the editor donated their time pro bono just because I knew them. And then like the production company, like I knew them, they shot everything for free. And so I think like, you just have to be, it's scrappy, like in life, you have to like, be respectful to people, be nice to people. And then like when you do need a favor from them, like I think people are more likely to help someone that if you're like a good person and a good human, instead of like, oh no, he was a complete asshole, like I'm not going to help that guy, or, you know. So I think I've always kind of had that entrepreneurial kind of spirit in my bones, you know, of just kind of like, okay, this is what the status quo is and this is boring. I want to do something different, you know?
Yeah. But just even the way you're talking about it, you're telling me, the way I read it is like, this is the way your mindset is that creating your own opportunities isn't necessarily just about a job. It's the way you walk through this life. It's like when you're, yes, an opportunity is going to come when you're present for people, when you pour into others, when you're, you know, helping your team, as you heard me say in the opening of this, like, you know, take your game to the next level together, then you're going to create those opportunities together. So I just point that out because it's something that I think is like for kind of for the listeners and sharing this, I think it's something that's like additive, you know, it's like over time, it's not, there's like one thing you do per se,
right.
You know, and it's also like the way you get better at it. So when we were talking about how you learn to find those insights, how you learn to take a client's concept to the next level, it's because you're showing up every day and putting in the work to make yourself better at doing that.
Right. Well, I mean, and, you know, like I said, my fourth grader just made the travel team. And so we had our first practice last night. And so, you know, I sat them down and I said, you know, out of 85 kids, you guys were the top kids that made the team. Like, you should be really proud of yourselves. Like, I saw you guys at camps this summer at 3v3 leagues. And, you know, I've seen so much growth. And I'm like, if I did my math right, like, you guys are the top 12% of the basketball players in our city, which is incredible. So cool. But I said to them, this isn't your final destination on your basketball journey. Like, this is just a stop. Like, if you want to keep growing in this sport, like, you got to keep working, and we're going to work really hard in practice. And I told them, I'm like, we have three rules. First rule is team first. Everything we do is for the greater team. Second rule, like, you're going to respect yourself and you're going to respect each other. And the third is have fun. And I said, as soon as you guys walk through the door, we're going to have fun. We're going to learn, but we're going to work hard. Like, this is going to be all business. And, and, you know, fourth grade boys, especially, like, it's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And so we practice for 6:30 to 8 o'clock last night, which is kind of that weird hour where they're like, they're hungry, they're tired. And we went from drill to drill and they had a blast and it was great. And, you know, I on our way home, my eldest said, he's like, you know, it just kind of felt awkward tonight practicing. And I was like, well, buddy, you know, basketball is a lot like dancing. Like the first time you dance with someone, it's really awkward. But as soon as you build that trust and you have like kind of like you feel that vibe with each other, you start getting better at dancing and start getting better. I'm like, these are all new players on the team. Like you've never played with them. Because prior to that, he was on, I think he played with like the same kids for about 3 years. So they got to that point where it's like they knew where each other was on the floor.
Yeah.
And when we run our offense and stuff, we're not going to have a set offense. We're going to do a motion offense where we're going to let the boys create their own opportunities of like reading the floor and like doing back doors and, you know, pick and rolls and everything like that. And, you know, and that's the thing that I try to hit home with them. It's like, we can coach you as much as we can, but when you're on the floor, like it's you and your team, like you guys need to make the decision. You need to make your opportunities for yourself. And it's like, you know, don't take stupid shots because you're covered. Like find that open person and, you know, make those opportunities, you know, and I think it's a good lesson.
It's an amazing lesson. And I'm grinning like a goofball over here because this is what I talk about with leadership athlete. Everything you just talked about in my brain translates to work. When you're leading a team on a project, delivering, all the stuff you said applies. When you're in that room pitching to the client, you got to, you know, that's that chemistry. And here's the thing, like energy does not lie. If you put in the work, if you show up there together and you're trusting each other and you are a squad in that room, that client is like just taken by that. I want that to be my team. And it's electric. That's why I say like energy doesn't lie. So everything you said, even the part about like, you know, when they came into the gym and how you operated with them. This is when I was leading teams within the agency world. There was the bit of like, I said this and some people thought it was a little bit much, but I was like, we are all here to earn our paycheck every day.
Right.
You come in, you work your ass off, you have fun, you rely on your teammates. But at the end of the day, we have a job to do, you know? Right. So there's no like screwing up and not getting it done and missing deadlines, stuff like that. Because to your point, you care about that team. You care about the finished product, you know? And so you want to go the extra mile, put in the reps every day, all of that. So to me, like, that is a perfect example. You said it for me about the leadership athlete mindset. And that was one of the things, again, when I was reading your profile and we had our exchange, and then I also found out that you were into mentoring and coaching, I was like, oh my God, he gets it. So it's so awesome to hear you say it, all of this.
Yeah, it's... You know, like I've never taken like a leadership course or anything like that. I think just from coaching youth sports. And I mean, if you can get a first grader to listen to you and like get them to do a drill correctly, like you're on the right track because it's hit or miss, you know, and they're all at different skill sets. But I remember at my first job, my creative director told me, he's like, you know, being reliable is the biggest talent you can have in business. He's like, if you lose your reliability, and no matter how talented you are, you're going to be worthless to your team. Because like you said, it's about trust. It's about showing up and it's about putting in efforts. It's like you miss a deadline. Like that's, it's not good. You know, like you can push deadlines out. If like, okay, we're onto something really interesting. We need like another day to push it. But it's like, 11th hour, it's like, hey, we didn't work on this all week. Can you move this? It's like, no. Like,
no, actually.
No, you're staying up all night because you fucked off all week. Like, you need to do this, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I knew someone that would say that it takes 20 years to build a reputation and it takes 20 seconds to ruin it.
Yep.
And it is really so true. But that goes back to like, how are you showing up every day? How are you walking through, you know, out on the court? And, you know, are you encouraging your team? Are you there to, you know, or do you have a chip on your shoulder? Are you screwing off or whatever the thing is? But, you know, whether it's on the field of play or it's in the, you know, workforce, I think it's the same. And even the part about you said, if you can teach a first grader a drill, the thing is that we're all have the human condition, right? So we're all wired a bit differently. But as a leader in business, you have to figure out what makes each person tick. Right. And you know, like you might have to treat one person, encourage them, the other person, you know, give them a bit of a hard time, whatever that is. But that's part of the responsibility, I think, of a leader is being able to do that, to figure it out. And that's when you can get the team, you know, to start working together more and even understanding how each other ticks.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's 100%. And I even think like when you're in a leadership position and something isn't going the way you want it, like you almost have to like take a step back and be like, okay, I'm the leader. I got to swallow my pride and be like, how can I get this person to perform better? You're like, even if they're not doing it the way I want them to do it, how can I find that, you know, that common ground to like inspire them or motivate them? Cause it's like, you know, we're not in a dictatorship where it's like, no. You need to do it one way, you know? So you got to like take that step back and be like, okay, I would never approach this problem this way or work this way. Like, I think it's insane, but apparently it works for this person and I'm going to find out why and find that middle ground.
Right. But you're also, you're speaking to curiosity. You're speaking to inspiring creativity in others. And, you know, I think like, again, those are difference makers. And I think something that's interesting is there's an element of proactivity to your mantra of creating your own opportunities. There's such an element of proactivity versus that reactivity. So
right. If
you're being proactive about where's the insight, where, you know, where's that next big idea? How do I, I'm curious and being proactive about how to lead this person. You know, I think these are, I often look for these little reminders for myself and that right. I share with the audience. And I think that's just a big one. The difference between, are you being reactive or proactive?
Yeah. And I think being proactive, I think it makes you look better instead of reacting. Cause like when you're reacting, like you're on the defense, but like if you're proactive, sorry for the another basketball analogy.
I love it.
Just slipped out, but it's like, you're finding problems that your clients don't even know are problems yet.
Yeah.
And then like, oh my God, like these guys are a true partner for our business. Like they're invested in us and it's a true partnership instead of like, X, Y, and Z happened. How can we handle it? It's like,
I don't know.
I don't even know what that means. Instead of like, hey, we saw this problem. This is what you should do. And they're like, holy shit, like, this is great. And, you know, I always tell, you know, people that I lead or, you know, even, you know, the fourth graders, it's like complaining is not going to do you any good. You know, like if you get feedback, you know, on the agency side, if you get feedback from client that you don't agree with and it sucks or you have to start over, it's like you can spend that energy being negative and complaining, or you can just be like, okay, challenge accepted. They didn't like these ideas. I'm going to come back with, you know, 10 more way better ideas and be, you know, positive about it. Because if you're just complaining and being negative, you're wasting time.
It's funny that you said that, because that's exactly what I was thinking. I saw some video this morning, actually, on Instagram where this woman, she was speaking to the camera saying like, if you're actually going to record yourself crying about something and then find the right song to go over it and then sit there waiting to comment with people, I'm actually more concerned with your like time management. And it made me laugh because I was like, oh, actually it's so true. And then you saying this, that's the thing. If that's where you're focusing your time and energy, then I've got a concern about time management because you just lost this huge window when you could have pivoted. It's like, if we're talking basketball, it's like, you know, if you miss the shot and you sulk, they just took the ball and scored on you on the other end, you know? So it's like, you got to control that.
Well, and that's another thing that I tell the boys, because last season in third grade, I had a couple kids that if they missed a shot or if there's a bad foul, like they would just spiral out of control. And they were two of the best players. And so we needed them to be mentally tough. And so in practices, we would start calling fake fouls on them, like travels or reach in. And they would get mad. And I'm like, and by 30 minutes in, they started laughing. I'm like, yes, this is the mindset you need. Laugh this off, because you're going to have calls and games that you're going to be like, I didn't touch that person. And then you start, you know, spiraling. And it's like, we need you to focus on the end result. So like, if you can start practicing this mental toughness, like you're going to be good in games. Like we'll do this thing when we scrimmage, I'll have two captains pick the teams. And then they're very like, okay, I need a point guard. I need a tall guy. So they're very thorough about it. And I'm like, okay, captain stay, team switch. Like, well, that's not fair. I'm like, basketball's not fair. You guys got to figure this out, you know? And so I think just having like that mental toughness too, of when stuff gets thrown at you in basketball and life, business, whatever, like you can spend so much time wasting and pondering and like, oh, you know, woo is me. But then it's like, you still got to figure it out. So it's just like, okay, that sucked. How can we move on now? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of times I share things about myself because I'm not preaching when I say when I have these kind of discussions. It's so much that I too have learned. And, you know, I remember the first time I was laid off at the start of the pandemic and like, whoa, how like, I was so taken aback by it. And then, you know, when the tech downturn happened and then I had gotten a job and had lost my job again. And, you know, so it was like my goal through the coach that I work with, who's an amazing guy, Leslie Harris, has been to shorten the time frame of that reaction, you know? And so when something crazy happened this year, I was talking to him about it and he was like, I would like to point out that you have shortened the time of like letting it throw you off.
Right.
And because so I think it's something that we all have to learn over time. And it's sometimes it's easier to see it in others and coach other people, but then when it's actually you, we're like, oh, right. But it was something stuck for me when I was like, oh, part of what I'm trying to do is just shorten that time frame. I'm human. We talked about this earlier, like the human condition. I'm going to get pissed off about something. I'm going to feel those things. But to your point, it's like, okay, like instead of it being 3 hours, make it 30 minutes, you know, whatever that just to, you know, because we're all human, but I think, you know, it's a really good point you're making.
Well, I think, you know, and like you said, we're all human and it's all about perspective and by no means am I perfect. Like there's days where I'm just like, whatever, you know, but then like, you know, other days when like something happens, like, okay, well, that sucks. Let's move on. You know, some days are better than others, but I think, you know, and I tell that to my two kids too. I was just like, actually my wife probably said this because she's smarter than I am. Like you just switch your perspective on things, just a slight change of perspective. Like it changes your whole outlook, you know,
it's so true.
And it's great, you know?
It's so true. Again, my coach says like he references 12 degrees of shifting your perspective, which I think has some sort of connotation related to golf. But it is really, and sometimes it's like to shift your perspective. Sometimes you literally have to like stand up and look in a different place and like get your mind to think differently or talk to somebody and you're like, oh, right. I could think of it differently. Or I always say to people, I'm like, okay, I am going to be the pain in the ass. It's going to play devil's advocate right now.
Right.
What if X, Y, Z? And those I think are things that just throw us into that perspective shift.
Right.
Or else we're just stuck. You know, we keep ourselves stuck.
Right. And I think another way to change your perspective is like go to a DMV like on a Monday morning. Like that place is so depressing. It's like, okay, at least we're not here, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. That's such a good point. So, no, I really appreciate this conversation around mentoring and the way that you're showing and you know, you're literally living and breathing the leadership athlete mindset, which I just respect and encourage others, you know, if it's resonating with you, I'm glad. And, you know, and I love to see what you're doing. But before I let you go, because I have taken up quite a bit of your time, which I'm so grateful. It's been a really fun conversation.
Yeah, likewise.
You're a big hoop head, which I loved right away. We talked about your father-in-law, who's been a big player. And so I'm curious, you said you played in high school, correct?
I did. Yep.
Okay. So who is your all-time favorite player, woman or man?
I grew up in the 90s. So Michael Jordan, the OG. But since I am from Minnesota, Anthony Edwards is coming in as a close second.
Like
he's starting to bring the swagger back to basketball. Which I like,
love that.
But I also, love you know, being a Minnesota guy, the Lynx are incredible.
Oh my gosh. They're doing so amazing.
We got, Jude, my eldest, his team played before a Minnesota Timberwolves game this last year.
Oh, fine.
And so the Wolves gave us two tickets to a Lynx game. And so I'm like, okay, this is cool. They gave us seven rows up behind the hoop. Like it was incredible.
Wow.
So we got to meet a few players and it was awesome. And then, you know, I think they just swept the team they played, but yeah, it's, you know, I love it. It's been fun watching him because he actually has a Lynx jersey now that he wears.
Oh, I love that.
So he rotates that out with his Steph Curry, his Anthony Edwards, his cat jersey, and then his, you know, WNBA. And I just think it's so great. Everything has happened with that, but WNBA, like Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, like they totally lit it up. It's great.
Yeah. It's been so amazing. It's been so amazing to see, especially as I mentioned in what we were talking before this. You know, I was involved like back in 99 and 2000 with Nike and the WNBA for like, you know, long time ago when the season, when the league was, you know, really getting going. So it's
Right.
so, I have so much fun. I'm like addicted to League Pass, I have to say, the W League Pass. So Chicago, if Jordan was your favorite player, so I assume your favorite team has been the Bulls.
Yep.
So were you like me with posters in your room?
Yep. I had like all the what was it, the Dunkarize posters or whatever, like when they would just, so I had all those. I had all the Wheaties boxes. But yeah, and I love the Seattle Sonics too when they were still around. Gary Payton, Sean Kemp. God, what was his name? Kemp. He was like, or he was like a white dude with a flat top. He was really good.
Deadless Shrimp or something.
Yes, yeah. There's a
I
shrimp,
probably
yeah.
to sorry folks who's listening, I totally slaughtered his name probably. I still have to this day in my I've moved a lot of places as you have. To this day, I still have one of my posters, my Jordan posters from when I was a teenager on the wall, the one where he's got his wings, his arms out,
Oh,
and it says
yeah.
wings at the top. So my husband's like, do you need these anymore? I'm like, yes, you can't touch
Yes,
those.
we need these. Yeah, it's yeah, what he did for the game was insane. Like I just rewatched the Last Dance before coaching basketball this again this year.
I love your
Just
hype yourself up. So
yeah.
good.
Which is it's really funny. Like my wife asked me, like, you know, when we left for practice, like, how are you feeling for about practice? I'm like, I'm really nervous. She's like, they're fourth graders. I'm like, I know, but like they made the top team. Like, I don't want to let them
So
down, you know.
cool.
But I had like a practice plan that I printed out and I was like crossing everything off because,
I love it.
you know, and a lot of, you know, Jude friends made the team too. So at one point they're like, when did you become a good coach? And I was like, what? I'm like, you know, they're like, it was kind of like this backhanded compliment, but I'm like, I don't know, man. I've been watching YouTube before practice. I don't know what to tell you. But
So
yeah,
awesome. That's so
it's
awesome.
fun.
So folks, as you're listening to this, I think again, like if you're someone who, again, if this is resonating with you, remember when you're watching a sport, there are definitely like parallels to in leading in business. As you know, as you go, as the leader goes on the court, as the leader goes in, you know, in careers, and then as the, you know, as the team goes. So I think hopefully this lands with people as much as it has with me. Brett, it's been amazing to have you on. So the last thing I'm going to say is, if you have a takeaway for the audience, what do you hope that they take away from your episode?
I would say no matter what career you're in or moment in life, don't be discouraged. Like you get more no's before you get a yes. Just keep grinding, keep working, and it's going to happen. Take it from a guy that thought he was going to be at Kinko's his whole life. So it all works out.
I love that. Such great insight, such great experience that you shared with us today. So thank you so much
Yeah,
for like
thanks for
that
having
tip.
me.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody have an amazing day. Thank you so much.